And now the story of two friends who only liked watching TV and the one podcast that keeps that dream together. It's James and Alex's Arrested Development.
All right, let's get right to it, James. Oddly enough, we've never talked about the show on the podcast.
Can you believe it?
Yeah. I mean, we're going to be talking pretty exclusively about season four of Arrested Development here, because I feel like the first three seasons have been well talked about by now. But we still need to set it up a little bit, just because, you know, we haven't gotten either of our opinions on the first three seasons. And typically when a good show ends or a good show is on that we care about, we get sort of like our closest friend who knows a lot about the show to be on the podcast. Like I had Emily when 30 Rock ended, Sarah when The Office ended. I doubt I'll ever meet anybody that knows Arrested Development as well as you do, in that you seem to be kind of personally obsessed with it for about 1 to 2 months of your life, possibly to the detriment of your scholastic career. But yeah, so I guess as our senior Arrested Development expert, what is it about the first three seasons that you like in more details than, you know, it's funny because it's very funny.
You finally have a use for me, eh?
Yeah, finally found one. Only took almost 130 episodes.
Well, I think it's funny. No. I think it's really funny. And yes, I do think it's up there for one of my favorite TV shows ever. Mm-hmm. And I'm not really good at picking my own favorites, but I find this one is just so good. So funny, so clever. And unique in a lot of ways. As you said, it's kind of been covered a whole bunch about how much critical acclaim this had and how, you know, underrated it was at the time, at least by the viewing public. But yeah, it's just a very funny show. The things that I like about it that kind of separate it from other things, particularly other comedies, is just the continuous story of it. You know, shows like Seinfeld and The Office and all these other shows that people really like, they do continue, you know, they do progress. There is a storyline there, but usually you can pluck an episode out or rearrange a few and not really have an issue. This one is, the continuity is so important. It's important to the humor sometimes because, you know, you'll get an extra laugh knowing where the story goes. But it's like the HBO and AMC shows that, like the drama shows that really engross people. Mm-hmm. I find this has the same thing as far as, you know, just not having little self-contained episodes and having everything on a continuum and just that progression. You could, you know, take the comedy out of this show and have a very compelling drama about, you know, this dysfunctional family and their crooked business and things like that. It has so many of the kind of the features of, you know, as I said, those AMC or HBO or, you know, FX or I guess now Netflix shows like House of Cards that really draw you in, you know, with the intrigue and the betrayal and things like that. But this one is just so silly and it's so funny. As you said, besides what's funny, besides it being funny, what do you like about it? It's funny, but it's so funny. And it's just one of the best examples of something I can point to that is so dense. The humor is so densely written. There's rarely a minute goes by, even if it's not a laugh out loud joke, there'll be some humor, some callback, some little tidbit, even if you didn't get it the first time through. And even if it's not a belly laugh, it's just a little bit of wordplay. I think this show is just written really well once and then just gone over and over and over again, trying to find any little spot you can sneak one more joke in there. And mm-hmm. Obviously, I'm not privy to the writing process of this show, but it just seems like they had this grand scale. And, you know, that's another part of things being continuous. It's not just that it progresses, but it seems to have a pretty good idea when it starts about where it's going to end up, especially, mm-hmm. you know, with the rewatching, you pick up on those things. It's like those other big drama shows I mentioned in that it just has this epic scale. But to see this done for kind of a surreal, goofy comedy, I think is just unlike anything else I can really think of.
I think that is a fair assessment.
Yeah. And I mean, I mentioned the puns and wordplay kind of stuff. I'm such a sucker for that. And this show does this, does that kind of stuff so well.
Yes.
And, you know, at times it feels cheap. Like sometimes a joke will be so not obvious, but after you hear it, it's kind of a groaner. Like you kind of like, oh, really, you did that. But just in this format, I think it's so good. And with the density of jokes, it's just it's such a well-crafted script by the time it's all said and done.
Yeah.
And I like a lot of the highly improv shows. I like, you know, shows like Curb Your Enthusiasm. And I appreciate just improv comedy and people who can do stuff off the cuff like that. I'm really impressed by that. But I just think it's such an achievement to have something so tightly scripted that, you know, you can't really do that kind of stuff because all these lines, every single word is so deliberate that, you know, you're negating another joke if you forget to mention this thing. Even if the payoff isn't for 2.5 seasons, it's going to be there eventually. And so just such a well-written show and performed really well, too.
Yeah, I think that's putting it mildly.
Yeah. Other things I like. I like a lot of the meta self-referential stuff. And when this was kind of blowing up, when the show was kind of getting underway is when that stuff was kind of blowing up. And I don't think there's too much of it in the show that bothers me. Mm-hmm. There are shows or movies where it can be too much for me. And
like a show that this show often makes fun of, in Entourage.
See, I never watched Entourage, so I don't know.
I watched very little Entourage, but enough to know that it would bother you.
Yeah, and we disagree about the movie Seven Psychopaths, which is a movie not a lot of people saw, but yeah. I only mention it just because that was a movie that it got so self-referential that it got really tedious for me and really unenjoyable.
See, I agree. I thought Seven Psychopaths was funny, but the meta stuff is where I had problems with it. But anyway, this is not a Seven Psychopaths podcast.
No, it's not. But it's just to say that there is a spectrum, and I feel like you can take that stuff too far, that it gets really tedious and too up its own ass.
Yeah, for sure.
And you can stop liking it for that reason. If it's, you know, I think it's, you know, the meta stuff's funny. The postmodern stuff can be funny. But when it gets too aware of itself, that it just kind of, it seems more like a chore to notice what things are, you know, referencing itself, then I'm not into it.
Yeah.
This, I think, walks that line really well. And there are just some small jokes. Again, you might not even get them the first time around. Or in the first three, in the third season, when they're talking about taking the housing development to another company, and they say the home builder's office or something like that. And Michael says, oh, no, the HBO is not going to want us.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, you don't even get that even watching it all the way through without doing research on it and realizing that they tried to get to HBO and that Fox had cut their number of episode order, which shows up in them cutting the number of houses that were ordered and things like that. Like, it goes outside of itself sometimes to make these self-referential jokes, but I never think, or rarely think, at the expense of the overall humor of the show or the pacing of the show.
Okay. And then since the Home Builder's Office didn't want them, they went away for quite a while.
Yes.
Now Mitch Hurwitz and Jason Bateman and the crew are back. Season 4 premiered, I think, May 26th. And we've now seen it, and it exists. It's a thing that exists.
Yeah.
So point Alex. Number one for both of us is hurrah.
Point number zero is you said it would never happen.
I did say it would never happen, but I said there is literally nothing I would be happier to be wrong about.
No, I
think I would I would say that as the follow-up sentence every time I would say that.
Yes. But this is the one time me being a hopeless romantic about the shows that I like worked out and proved you wrong. Yeah, so it bears mentioning.
Being emotionally dead inside works out 99% of the time. So. And that extra 1%, it's just a surprising joy, you know? So it's great.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So season 4, how did you feel about the season generally?
I've only seen it through once. And as I kind of said before, this is a show that really rewards rewatching. I liked it. It definitely started off slowly for me and then picked up a lot of steam. I thought it was funny. I thought it was enough like the old stuff that it kind of fits in with the canon of the first three episodes, but they definitely took a different approach. And it's not just to say that this was worse or better, but just the format, you can tell that they knew they were dealing with something different. This wasn't the season four that they would have had if Fox just renewed them for season four.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think it's different, and I think they did a good job. And of course I had very high expectations for this, for season four. And I was not let down, and I know, or am 98% sure that watching it again, I will only like it more just because of my experience with the first three seasons and my experience with the, you know, later episodes of season four making me retroactively appreciate some of the things done in the earlier episodes that I thought were, you know, slow or didn't have a payoff.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I've just been reading a lot of people's opinions lately, and I think some people feel that that's kind of, you know, giving the show too much credit, and that I want to like it more than I really should, mm-hmm. really more than it is merited, considering mm-hmm. the actual content. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's it. I want to believe, at least, that I would say this is a bad season if it was a bad season, and I just don't feel that it is.
Okay.
How did you feel about it?
I liked it quite a bit. I feel basically the same as you, that it really does pick up steam the more you go. And even watching it again, I've watched it three times now, just because I have no life. It doesn't get any better the second time through, I didn't think. Like, there's little things. It's similar to how you would feel watching the first three seasons the second time. Like, it's still very, very funny, but you're still sort of enjoying the same things. So that was the one thing I was sort of surprised about watching it again. But through, like, I still think the second episode is like the weak one, you know, just because it's so plot heavy, and even knowing more when seeing it again a second time, I still don't like the episode. And when watching the series a third time, I skip the episode, you know, just for time reasons. But it's a very, very good. It's very funny. It's different from the first three seasons, like you said, but not so much that, you know, they sort of strip the comedy away. They just sort of morph the comedy, you know. And Mitch Hurwitz, the creator of the show, has said part of the reason the season is the way it was, or almost entirely the reason the season is the way it was, is that they could have shot it with everybody together for 1 week, or they could have spread it out over 4 months and, you know, done a season with having all these characters shot individually and sometimes crossing over. And like you said, this wouldn't be the season four on Fox, but one, that there's any season four is great. Two, that even if this was season four on Fox, you know, I think it would be a slight letdown, because I do think it's less funny. But it also did something different. So I can't, I don't know. I say too many things about try something different, exclamation point. You know, it's Rashomon on crack, and I respect that.
You know? Yeah. So, this show was so ensemble, especially in the first three seasons. You know, it's about a big family, and it's about all their interactions together. And there are characters outside of the family that they obviously deal with. But, you know, it's a show, as the intro says, about a family, and the one guy tries to keep them all together. Do you think it suffered from having kind of isolated stories? And, you know, again, they deal with each other in this episode and in this season. And
yeah.
You know, they're still very much a family that has, you know, they get along and they use each other and they betray each other and all the things that good TV families do. Do you think it suffers from kind of shying away from that ensemble stuff of bouncing off each other so much?
Yeah, I think that's the thing I miss the most about it. Again, that we touched on it briefly, that all of these individual performers are so, so talented, and just nail their roles. I think it's not as bad as it really could have been with basically any other cast. Like, I think 30 Rock is probably my second favorite comedy show. And if 30 Rock did this, it would not work. Like, it would just be, I'd love the Jack Donaghy episodes and maybe half of a Tracy Jordan episode, and the rest would just fall flat. And that's just sort of how good everybody is individually and together. But yeah, the one thing I think really I miss the most about the first three seasons is, you know, a scene where it would start with Michael talking to Lucille in the kitchen, who then leaves, and then Tobias or George Michael comes in and slips on the drink that Gangi spilt. And then Tobias comes in after that, slips again and says, "Oh, is your mother here?" Like that, that's the stuff that I felt you didn't get a lot of in this season, partially, you know, you just couldn't. I think the one sort of, and this is one of my favorite moments in the season is, and we've talked about this one already, is Michael at the airport in the first episode. Yeah. That's one of the moments where you get sort of that, like, and it's not that ensemble. It's different kind. It's a different ensemble. It's a different show's ensemble specifically.
Yeah, Workaholics.
Yeah. But that, I thought that scene is one of the most rewarding scenes in the show, because it just, it's the same joke for 5 minutes, but just so fucking funny. And just like when he's going through the security after he's already explained it to the ticketing guys, and just like, "Well, P-Hound's obviously going to vote for you," or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, you just, God, let three people walk by wearing burkas.
I know. And like, I have no idea who plays the flight attendant, but whoever says, it's like, "If you'd like, I could go get one for you. Or if I prefer, you can," and just walks away. Like, yeah. Just so many little characters in the show that just incredible casting. And yeah, and I think, you know, those are the things that I'm missing, but all of the little things still make this a funnier show than basically anything else.
Yeah, and it's just about the ensemble thing. One of the very common favorite things in the first three is the chicken dance. Yeah. And all the iterations of that. And you know, that's the family together, and I love in the first three when they all chant for a speech on Valentine's
yes.
Day. Like, when this family is all together, because this show, and it's one thing I want to mention that I like about the show overall, is that it's surreal. And I know I said that word before, but it's such a surreal comedy. Like, it's still in, you know, America. It's still in California. It's in Orange County. Like, it's in our universe. And sometimes the politics or like the bigger, grander universe works out and lines up with our real world. Mm-hmm. But then sometimes things are just so goofy and off the wall, and characters are named Cindy Lightballoon, and it fits in with how, you know, goofy the world is and how wacky the universe of Arrested Development is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you'll have these huge visual gags, and you can have a character like Tobias in this world, and you know, it's funny, it's comedy, but it's not so, like, he's not that much of an outsider considering the nonsense that goes on around him.
Yeah, absolutely.
And yeah, I like that kind of big surreal world that they're in. And I only bring that up when speaking about the whole family, because when you see them all together, when you see how damaged they all are, like they're not good people. Sometimes they try to be good. Even Michael, who I think we're supposed to feel is probably one of the best, or George Michael maybe, acts very selfishly and short-sighted and things like that at times.
Yeah. Michael's an asshole. That's like the one thing nobody understands about, or very few people understand about Arrested Development, and that are starting to understand it now because season four, he's just such a tool. But
yeah,
the first
bad.
Three seasons, he's a shithead. Like,
yeah,
he's the best of the group, with the exception of George Michael, who I think is the most innocent, but, you know, still not maybe quite as innocent as Michael Cera's face might make you believe. But yeah, I think that's sort of the thing that people don't always pick up on in the first three seasons of Arrested Development, is that Michael acts really selfishly a lot.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I chalk part of that up to him being the straight man, because even if he's not the best, he's certainly the most real world. If you've met anybody in this show, it's George Michael or Michael Bluth.
Yeah.
As, you know,
as hard as I've tried to meet adult maybe.
Yeah, right. And so I think a lot of people are just very used to being, for the straight man being the best person as well. And he's not. And they really do that in season four. He's, I think, clearly a lot visibly worse. And interestingly, we see George Michael kind of very explicitly reach a point in his life where he starts being more of a Bluth and starts looking out for himself and being more of a piece of shit than he normally is.
Yep.
Any favorite new people for the new season?
Well, I already said that flight attendant with one line.
Right.
I don't know.
Pardon? Marky Bark? Debris?
I thought everybody was funny. I enjoyed Marky Bark and the Funke Bunch. I just like being able to make that joke.
Yeah.
But no, I also he also plays a pivotal role in the last season of The Office and kind of pissed me off in that show. So I was already against Marky Bark. But I don't know. Nothing that, you know, I feel like is an integral part to the show going forward. I feel like for the most part, the characters that they brought back were still the ones I enjoyed, you know? But yeah, I don't know. Everybody that came in worked, and I enjoyed Rebel Alley was probably the biggest new character, right?
Yeah. Probably had the most screen time.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe Marky Park too, but
he really disappears after like episode 5. You almost barely see him after that.
Yeah. I thought he was the one who seems the most, like he fits the most in Arrested Development, or the first like 3 seasons.
Yeah.
At least.
Okay.
He just seems like a very Arrested Development character.
Gotcha.
Did you like someone pointed this one out to me, and I kind of felt like an idiot for missing it. His facial blindness condition, mm-hmm. and how he never recognizes Lindsay, and how a lot of people are saying they don't recognize Portia de Rossi, and that she looks a lot different too.
Yeah, I find those complaints founded when she's wearing a wig. When she has long hair, I think she looks weird. When she has short hair, I think she looks normal, which is kind of the thing they've said, is that she's wearing a wig and that's why she looks weird. And when I read that, I was like, no, that's bullshit. And then I looked at her face and was like, yeah, no, that works. That's correct.
They are actually
not lying. It's just a couple of really bad wigs. So just make her forehead look large.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
John Beard Jr.
Well, yeah.
That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, exactly. There was a lot of good stuff in the season. I mean,
yeah, we'll talk about some of your favorite jokes, some of your favorite things of season 4.
I think, I don't know, it's sort of
box cutter scene.
But yeah, specifically box cutter. If I have to isolate one line from that, it's like, oh yeah, sure, we just let people walk on the plane. Would you like a box cutter? Amazing.
that's the one that killed me too.
Yeah, no, it just his eyes as well when he's saying that. No, there was a bunch of stuff. I think the things that made me laugh the hardest was a lot of Lucille that I think I probably like more than most people because I'm a huge Lucille fan.
I think she's funny.
Yeah, I know. I think everybody thinks she's funny, but she's like upper echelon of this show to me. Like just one of the first lines she has, I think, when they're talking about the wall and she's like, which was my idea. And like, just, yeah, like, I think she's so funny. But I think like, and the B word from the C word is one of my favorites.
Or is it the C word from the B word?
Exactly. But no, the two that made me laugh the hardest were basically like the first 7 minutes of Job's first episode, where he has sex with Anne and then has that breakdown while wearing her jumper or whatever. He's like, come on. And then says, marry me. And then they're surrounded by her family and the Sound of Silence plays.
I had to ask you about that.
Yeah. Every time the Sound of Silence played, I laughed hard.
I didn't know if that would bug you because the show so rarely relies on real music.
Yeah.
Like they have so many of their own little original music cues that I love in the first 3 seasons. Like, and I love how they get used, and I love, kind of a lot of callback nature of some of them.
Yeah.
Other than Mr. F.
No, but I think like the Sound of Silence, I like Simon and Garfunkel more than the average person my age.
That's what I mean. I know you like that song a lot. I didn't know if you'd feel it was out of place.
I also think it's an inherently humorous song, despite being a fan of it. And that, you know, there's a lot of referencing to The Graduate. Well, I guess every time they play The Sound of Silence, it's kind of a reference to The Graduate, as is Michael on the moving walkway at the beginning or at the end of season or episode 1.
And you get an underwater shot in a pool in season 4.
Yes, you do. And I'm always a fan of referencing The Graduate. And I think the themes of The Graduate really tie into this season. But yeah, no, it's just I thought that was really funny. And just the way he just gets engulfed by this family at like 3 in the morning or whatever time it is after he's eating his egg, It's amazing. And the Whoa, other
eating his egg. G-rated episode here, come man.
On. He's eating a literal egg right before that happens. But no, the other two that killed me was the in Maybe's episode, George Michael's kissing diagram or whatever you would call that.
You like that one?
Oh,
lot?
That killed me. I don't know, like, because it just kept going, and it just kept being funny. And the other one that made me, like, just burst out was I enjoyed the Maybe reveal as the shaman, but her saying, please don't squeeze the shaman made me really happy. And just the way she plays it is hilarious.
Yeah. So. Well, you touched on a bunch of things that I want to bring up. Okay. Job's episode, Job and Tony Wonder together, yeah. I thought was just wonderful.
Yeah.
Their discovery of friendship, yeah. Both of them being too unfamiliar with it to know it's happened.
Like, I have feelings.
It is. I was trying to think of something that does it, but it's the, like, there's a really long stretch of this, of just those two having a back and forth.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
like, you kind of get, they change rooms and things get a bit more sexual, obviously. Yeah. the tone changes and the setting changes, but I think in all of Arrested Development, I can't think of a plot that, or a stretch of time focused on one plot like that between so few characters.
Yeah.
And obviously season 4, you're going to get way more of those because of the kind of individual focus of each episode.
Yeah.
But I was watching that and without being bored of it or hating it, I was like, this is really long. Like, this is going on for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they're really good. You know the story about that, right? Like, they almost couldn't get Ben Stiller.
No.
They shot, like, those were, I think, like, the last things shot, and they had already edited everything. And Ben Stiller had just been too busy shooting Walter Mitty, the movie he's got coming out this year, she directed, and they just couldn't get him. And it's just sort of, they ended up having him 2 days after they basically finished editing the show, with the exception of these scenes, which they just didn't shoot. Because Mitch Hurwitz is like, it's not funny if it's not Tony Wonder. It's not funny if it's just another magician. So they got it in, like, really, really under the wire when Ben Stiller had, like, 2 days, and they shot all of his stuff.
Wow.
Which I just learned and found very interesting.
I'm just so glad that happened.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Great. Speaking of Job.
Oh, I'm here. I'm queer. Now I'm over here is one of my favorite jokes too.
The return of the bees for Job.
Yes. Oh,
I was such a big fan of all the bees jokes and the original stuff. So happy about that.
I think, like, the bees thing is the one joke from Arrested Development that I've used the most in my life. Just because anytime somebody says something, bees or beads, it's a reflexive thing.
Yeah. And another joke thing I liked was the should. Yeah,
exactly. That's what I'm talking about. With the Joker.
Yeah, yeah. A classic Job.
Yeah.
And yeah, him and Michael in the model house opening all the Mike's Hard Lemonade on every part of the house. When they're twist offs as well. But yeah, Maybe's episode I thought was a standout.
I think Maybe and the first Job episode are the two best.
Yeah, admittedly, I like Maybe a bunch. I think a lot of her stories are really good. I like that she's the Bluth that kind of has the same morality as everyone else, which is, I don't give a fuck about anyone but myself.
Yeah.
But kind of like Michael, I guess, is just a bit of an overachiever. Like, she has a certain kind of intelligence. She actually reminded me a lot of Daniel Lugo from Pain and Gain. Like, Mark Wahlberg's character in Pain and Gain, she is ambitious and has this confidence and intelligence about her, but is so dumb and blind in so many ways. And I thought her episode was great. I really liked a lot of I liked her movie executive plot in the first three. So I was happy to see that come back.
Yep.
And as you said, the reveal of Maybe as the shaman, I think I would have really loved that in every episode. So maybe it's a little unfair that was already in an episode that I really, really liked.
Yeah.
But I thought her stuff was great. I thought she was really good.
Yes.
Tobias' episode is good too.
Oh, both of Tobias' episodes are great. The one new character actually that I didn't think of, who is probably my favorite of the new characters, is Argyle Ostero. Loved him.
the new Mr. F.
Yeah. Big fan of him.
Yeah, no, he was good. I like a lot of Tobias's actory stuff, especially his movie stuff was great, but in this season, his big focus on improv, which he's just as terrible at as he has been in every other form of acting.
Yes, absolutely.
I don't know my guy.
Yeah.
I thought it was fantastic, especially knowing, you know, his whole history in comedy and stuff like that. I thought that was great.
Yeah.
And I guess I shouldn't have been surprised, but I was happy to see that they still had some good homoerotic wordplay. All of his To Catch a Predator stuff, the anus tart.
Yeah.
One that just killed me. There's a bunch of lines leading up to this that I think put me in a pretty good laughing mood. But when John Beard approaches him and says, "So you're here for your daughter?" "Yes." "Maybe." I loved that. Because I also do use the word maybe like that a lot. Yeah. I think that helps. But I thought that was great. Is there a little girl here all by herself? Daddy needs to get his rocks off. Like, tons of the Fantastic Four stuff. As I said, I love the wordplay in Arrested Development. I didn't know what they had left. I understand that, you know, people have been making wordplay jokes for thousands of years. It's not really a finite amount of things, but there was just so many good ones that weren't repetitious from the first three seasons. And a bunch of the Fantastic Four stuff I thought worked out well, set up a ton of good puns. I liked him and Debris together. I liked the Method One Clinic stuff.
Yeah.
I liked his AC Slater reverse chair sit rap about.
Yeah.
Which takes down the chair that he still sits in while it's on his back.
Even if that didn't happen, it was just the let's have a rap about line, that would have been good enough. You know?
I would have been so pleased.
Yeah.
And the Thanksgiving Miracle is another Tobias thing that I really enjoy.
The one Tobias thing that I love that you didn't mention was him bringing Debris to the hospital, and then Ron Howard mentioning that it's a hospital that a lot of like actors and producers frequent, and he's just freaking out. He's like just yelling about how she's an actor and stuff like that. He's just having like a breakdown, just trying to get seen, basically. Loved it.
Do I like Barter? I don't know why that one works.
No, him in the car, like, it just everything with him on methadone was amazing. Just when they stop the car and he's just like smacking his lips together.
Weakest episode?
Either of the George Seniors.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, Heartfire really didn't do it for me.
Which one's that?
Oh, she's that girl who can't talk.
Oh, yeah. And she's a Mr. Title. Show person, even.
Oh, I am well aware of this fact.
Like, they found a way to get more Mr. Show people in here.
Are there tons?
There's more than most shows.
There's three.
There's got to be at least four.
Yeah, there's her, the waitress at Klimpy's, Jerry Minor, and Jay Johnston as cops. David Cross.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. That's enough to prove my point.
Let's list people who are on other shows.
Yeah. Other shows that probably not a lot of people listening to this podcast know about. But hey, Colin, Colin loved that list.
You know how this show wasn't a big hit?
Yeah. Let's talk about mid-90s HBO sketch comedy.
Older shows that were less of a hit, please.
But had just as much David Cross. If not more.
I'd say more, yeah. Oh, Bob Odenkirk was in this.
Yeah, okay. I couldn't remember if he was in one of the first three seasons, but I assumed he popped up somewhere. He's at every TV show.
Yeah. He was the therapist.
McNulty on the Wire?
Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing I liked about season four of Mr. Show, season four of Mr. Development was when they got kind of caught up with some of the jokes that they missed. I loved the Ed Helms as the real estate agent.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just talking about the housing crash jokes before the housing crash took place.
Yeah.
You know, that way you'll have it.
Yeah.
You know, you'll have it. Just that kept going and going, and I still loved every part of it.
That oddly has become a phrase that I've added to my lexicon.
Good.
Yeah.
I have no issue with that.
Yeah, because there's a maybe callback to that one as well that I enjoy.
Yes, yes, you're right. Yeah. I've kind of liked the way, even in the first three seasons, Arrested Development kind of engaged with social, political stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It never really felt preachy. Like, it's, they certainly criticize the right a lot, but they criticize the left as well.
Yeah.
You'd get the sense that probably more people involved in the show would call themselves liberal before they call themselves conservative, but it's not too preachy. It's not too shoving it down your throat. The way that we deal with the Iraq war for pretty much the first three seasons.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, we get the housing crash stuff. We get Herbert Love as our Herman Cain.
Yeah.
I like that. You know, it seems like the wheels are always spinning with Mitch Hurwitz and people. Not that I ever would accuse that guy of being intellectually lazy. Something made me happy about the idea, just the way that they did this over all those years and that they covered all those years. They didn't just say this was it, like, cover just a few months after the end of season three, or okay, now we're here. I really do enjoy the way that they covered all those years. I found it definitely confusing the first time through.
It's still confusing to me.
Yeah, I still don't fully get it, and we can maybe post that image I sent you on our site, but someone has taken the time to sort out all the chronology and plot it out on some kind of graph that shows when everything happened to who. And yes, it's very convoluted. Those first, especially two, I guess, the second episode, it does feel kind of tedious when we're doing all the recap and we're jumping around and you're really not with it. That's something that I kind of hope, knowing more the second time through, you can breeze through and kind of appreciate the humor a bit more.
Yeah.
You say that it's just also kind of a weaker episode, which doesn't surprise me that much. Like, it's, I just didn't laugh that much and didn't feel it was always just because of a lack of understanding.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just slower, more plot heavy, things like that.
Yeah, well, did you see that there have been two separate Redditors that have edited together a chronological version of the show?
Yes, I did. And I had a note that I wanted to ask you about that. Yeah. Do you have any interest in watching that?
Yes, absolutely.
Did you ever watch Memento in order?
No. Because I think Memento, to how I feel about Memento, the way time works in that is entirely, like, the movie depends on the way time works in Memento. I don't think I would necessarily enjoy Arrested Development less knowing how it works chronologically. I have less, less sort of thoughts going through my head when I'm watching Arrested Development. And mostly I just watch it for laughter. Whereas Memento is sort of a movie that I personally get a lot out of. Far more than just the mystery aspects. And I think the way they use memory in that movie is very, very important to, you know, how I feel about the end point of the film. Whereas Arrested Development, I like that, like I said, it's kind of Rashomon on crack. I would have been perfectly fine if it was just chronological. I think I probably would have liked it just as much, if not more. Yeah, and I guess sort of the big thing about Arrested Development that you mentioned much earlier on when we just started talking about this is that you enjoy sort of the HBO drama aspects of the show, but now with added comedy. I just watch it for the comedy. Like, the plot could be very, very simple, and I don't think missing an episode of Arrested Development, at least in the first three seasons, was as integral to you, at least from the plot. I wouldn't care. I would mostly worry about missing build up to jokes, because that's what I like about Arrested Development. This same ensemble being just as funny with, you know, very, very basic family sitcom plot points would have been just fine with me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. And with Memento, it's definitely part of the plot is the chronology of it, because, you know, without getting too deep into that movie, we kind of get in the spot of the protagonist because he has a problem developing short-term memories. Mm-hmm. So this idea of not being fully aware of your surroundings really, you know, ties you in with the experience of the protagonist.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas that is not part of this show.
Yeah.
That I mean, I guess I'm trying to draw a line between, is it the chronology of when the in season four, mm-hmm. where we will start, you know, in kind of present day, and then they'll do their very Netflix-y rewind of,
yeah,
this is how we got here, this is how we got here.
Yep.
I don't mean that within one episode. I mean things like maybe being the shaman, that payoff.
Yeah.
Even if we watch Lindsay's story chronologically, and then maybe it's chronologically, we still get that payoff later because of hers. You know what I mean? Like, there's a difference between the time rearranging in Memento versus the way that time is played with in Arrested Development, because we're seeing it not just from one perspective that has a skewed perspective, but differing perspectives that create, you know, kind of a different whole when all said and done.
Yeah, I agree with that. My thing is, this changed whole of Arrested Development wouldn't detract from what I've already seen, I don't think, as much as Memento might, you know?
Is that maybe...
I'm also more attached to Memento than I am to Arrested Development, so...
Yeah, and I know this. but that maybe being the shaman joke, do you not feel that that is funnier when that kind of ferments for, you know, 5-7 episodes?
Yes. Yeah, but I would be very curious to see sort of a more... like I mentioned earlier, the sort of airport stuff where things build. Like if we're getting sort of the whole... right after the basically our first new scene chronologically, right after the Queen Mary tips over. If we're seeing that whole scene chronologically, I'd be very curious to see how that looks. And just to see if there's sort of a more of a build on jokes, kind of accidentally, but also semi on purpose. I don't know, however you want to talk about the timeline of the show. But I do think for the shaman joke, for sure, I would lose something. Absolutely. And I'm happy I saw it the first way that the first time through, the way it was intended to be watched. But I think there's possibly some value in still watching it chronologically. And if I watch it again, I would watch it chronologically first.
Yeah. And I haven't watched that chronological one of Memento, but I think I feel the same way. Whereas if you were to watch that way for your first time, you would be robbing yourself some entertainment. And again, I haven't seen that edit of Arrested Development season 4. And I actually probably will, just to see the difference.
Yeah.
But I feel it's kind of the same way because it was designed to be watched this way. I do feel if that was your first time through, you would enjoy it less.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. I think that's a fair assessment for sure.
Do you think that this format, you know, this, the way that we've been talking about it, where, you know, you watch all of them through and many times you're going to see the same thing over and over, but you're seeing it with different perspective or a little bit more knowledge, and that makes it funnier. Do you think that would have been the same way if, you know, Fox doesn't renew it, but Netflix or, you know, CBS or something, you know, Netflix wouldn't have done it then because they're in the whole thing now. Do you think that would be the same way, or do you think it's because Mitch Hurwitz had so much time to come up with this grand thing and then really kind of work these kind of backwards, weird, tangential roads where he can place certain jokes and release certain bits of information to, you know, have these increased levels of humor from simple jokes. As we, like, just taking that maybe as a shaman, for example, which we've probably said too much, but I think is a good example. Do you think that it's because there's been so much time and because the way people talk about Arrested Development and the way that fans look at it is like the way they talk about it is say, this is this show that is really funny, mm-hmm. but it's even funnier when you watch it over and over. And I think this format lends itself even more to that type of appreciation.
Yeah.
And so do you think that kind of 5 years of percolating in his mind have really led to this format being the one he chose?
No. I think he sort of said, you know, not explicitly in interviews, but about as close as you can, that he did it this way or they did it this way because that was the way they could get it. That's the way they could make it happen. But, you know, because the actors are all so busy and it's just hard to get them all in one place together. He said something along the lines of, this is in an interview with Vulture. He said something along the lines of, creativity is what happens when you can't do the thing you want. And definitely what you're saying influenced the way the show ended up being. I don't think this was his first choice in any way. I think once it became clear that you can't get everybody in the room, then he's like, oh, we'll cover it up with all this. We'll do something along the lines of what they enjoyed. We'll make it valuable on rewatch. We'll really play with things, but we'll do it in a different way. But always kind of out of necessity, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's a bit of a happy accident that it worked out this way, but you're absolutely right.
It's amazing that it worked out this way. But I think if they could have done it the way I think they wanted to, I, for one, think this season would be better received by fans and critics, just for being more similar to what they want. Because, you know, when anything goes away and then it comes back, what people want is the thing that went away, not what came back. And Arrested Development looks very different now. And for people like us who enjoy sort of people taking leaps, and I will still say I enjoy this less than any of the first three seasons. But it's Arrested Development season four, so I can't say that much bad about it. You know?
Right.
And like, I have a lot of nitpicky things that exist now that didn't exist back then. But, you know, I don't know.
Whatever. Yeah, no, I think you're right. And it's obviously impossible to argue when he has said such, you know, specific things about this being the way they did it for this reason. And when you consider the green screen and just scheduling problems and budgetary issues, like they, you know, did a green screen just to get people together that they couldn't get together. You could tell that there was resource restraints. I think it's a bit of a happy accident, as I said, that I feel like this season is harder to digest than any of the other three seasons.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I mean, the episodes are a bit longer, probably 10 minutes longer, but
on average, yeah.
Yeah, but there's only 15 of them. So, you know, you're coming up to around the same amount of content.
Yeah.
But I think this one's harder to break apart and harder to digest and make sense of. And admittedly, I still don't fully feel like I've made sense of it. I feel like I fully get the first three seasons now, but that was with a lot of research.
Yeah.
I just think that after all these years, all this overanalysis of the first three seasons, all this campaigning to get a fourth one, and all these promises that, you know, we're going to like the new stuff, we're going to finally appreciate it the way that it should have been appreciated at the time of the first three, I think it's good that it came up to be this thing that is going to take more time to digest because there was a longer hunger for it. And, you know, I'm not going to say Mitch Hurwitz is wrong about why he did it because of this, despite him saying this is the better way. I just think that in a few ways that it is better this way. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying the show is funnier, and I'd want to watch, you know, this whole season again before I could really compare it to the other three. I'm not saying it's qualitatively better, pound for pound, laugh for laugh, but I think that this is just a much more fitting format than season four being, you know, just the next season.
Yeah.
Like, I just think it ended up in a very interesting and a very unique and an oddly fitting way. And I have been very careful to try not to just make excuses for the show and that whatever season four is, I'm just going to love it for what it is. But I do think that with so many years of anticipation, that for it to come out with this format that takes more time to figure it out, that takes more rewatching, takes more brain power to put it in order. And this was a show that already really lent itself to that kind of stuff already.
Yeah.
I think for season four to really hit those things on the head again, is just so appropriate.
Okay, well, yeah, and I mean, I hate to use two more Christopher Nolan movies in a podcast where we already talk about them too much. but I mean, I sort of trust your opinion there because that I think you will probably still like it. You're not making excuses because other things that you've liked similarly, specifically The Dark Knight compared to The Dark Knight Rises, like you had a lot more problems with The Dark Knight Rises, whereas I thought it was a good retread of the things that I liked about The Dark Knight. It wasn't perfect, but it was good enough. Whereas season four is sort of more what you would have liked out of The Dark Knight Rises, which is something significantly different from what came before. And
yeah,
I think that sort of allows you to keep mentally engaged the whole way through in a different way, which is cool, and which is something I appreciate again. I think that sort of explains that, you know, you're not making excuses. You enjoy it as much as you think you do. One thing, I had a conversation with our friend Spring the night before Netflix, or sorry, the Arrested Development.
Hey, Spring.
The night before Arrested Development premiered, we were talking about it and just our general excitement. And I think what I said was, I think it's something that's going to be seen as a mild disappointment initially, which I was kind of wrong about because I think people are generally satisfied with it. Although I think most people seem to agree that it's worse than the original, like the first three seasons. But I think it's something that opinion of it will definitely change over time. And I think it'll get more positive. And yeah, I think, I don't know, with shows like this, Arrested Development season four was not designed for the first watch. It was designed for the second and third. And I think that sort of hype, that sort of gets overblown a bit when people talk about the show, because I don't think it was a necessity for me to watch it again. I think I get enough of the gags the first way through that it was good. Like I was fine with it. And I feel that way about the first three seasons. I just enjoy watching it. I don't have that sort of obsessive thing with this show where I need to read all the posters in the background. And I think for the most part, they give you enough time when they are on screen that if you just have an active eye when you're watching it through the first time, you can get most of the jokes, if not, you know, like 95% of them. There are some little things on computer screens that, you know, you have to pause and stuff to get that I just don't care about. I don't want to say I don't care about them. I appreciate that they're there, but I'm not going to like pause a show to see one little, you know, life's a roofie circle on Maybe's yearbook, which, you know, I could see without pausing. But, you know, the equivalent of that, that goes by a bit faster.
Hooray for roofie. Like, so much of the roofie circle stuff killed me. Oh, my God. This season killed me.
It's so dark. The season's very dark. There's many sex
Jobs
offenders.
Is so creepy. Oh, yeah. There's a city of sex offenders. Yeah. A suburb of sex offenders.
It's crazy.
One of our main characters becomes a registered sex offender.
Two of them do.
Who else?
Maybe he's a sex offender at the end.
Yeah, who's the other one?
Tobias.
Oh, yeah, of course. I always talk to him as a sex offender, to be honest.
Oh, man. All right. Well, one thing I wanted to talk about, though, just because something I like this much, there has to be something more to it than just laughs. This was something that I think is, you know, present, like we talked about in Arrested Development, there's always some mild satire going on, political. There's a lot of atheistic humor in the first three seasons. There's less of that in this one, but it's still there.
I thought that was a real guy.
Yeah, exactly. That's specifically the line I'm talking about. But yeah, and I'm just curious to know, because I think, like, I don't think there was that much in Arrested Development season three as far as, or one through three, that I think sort of had a point. And they also didn't give us a running metaphor that, and I mean that kind of literally and I suppose figuratively all through the season that we get with the ostrich. And I think the few things that come up again and again, are, the ostrich, that are never explained, or the ostrich and love each other. I think love each other is a bit more self-explanatory because it's the last line of the season. It seems to be the final point that they want us to take away, that, you know, just respect each other and don't have sex with your son's girlfriend.
Yeah.
And vice versa, I guess. But I'm
your girlfriend's son.
I've been thinking a lot about the ostrich, and I'm trying to figure out what the ostrich is supposed to mean. And I'm very curious about your thoughts on it.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm going to give you a big disappointing, I don't know, it's just kind of a goofy, wacky animal. Like, yeah. It's one of those, I talked about the show being surreal. It's a flightless bird, you know? It's something that doesn't do what you expect it to do.
Yeah.
We kind of touched on it a bit when we were talking about everyone being damaged. The show is called Arrested Development, and it's one of the most cleverly titled shows, I think, ever. It's about development projects. People are frequently arrested. Every one of the children in the Bluth family is suffering from arrested development. They're all stuck in a weird point that they can't get past. As far as the ostrich is, it's just not doing what it was supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And, what it seems like it was designed to do. I think all these people have found themselves in a very weird place that they can't function in properly. Lindsay just wants to be good looking and do nothing else. She has this liberal strand in her that seems really unfounded. She has a lack of understanding of all these issues. Michael is suffering from a kind of a Freudian attempt to become his father, who he hates.
Yeah.
George Michael kind of has a little bit of the same thing. Buster is a mother boy. I don't think we need to touch on that one anymore. They're pretty clear about that one.
He's also a blindside monster.
He's a blindside monster. Tobias seems to be a cluelessly closeted homosexual.
That's just a fallacy.
What's that from?
It's from nothing.
No, it's weirdly tragic show that is so hilariously funny. One thing I wanted to say that I like about the first three seasons, and again, touching on Michael being a straight man, I think when this show tries for sentimentality or tries for seriousness, it does it very well. Okay. I think maybe in George Michael's thing is definitely awkward, but I don't want to say hits home because I'd never try to fuck my cousin. But like, there's something real there. And when I found out that it's Alia Shawkat's and Michael Cera's, or one of them, or both of them's first kiss in real life is when they kiss each other on set. I thought that was very weird. It's something oddly authentic about this show. And that's, I think, one of the most authentic parts of this show is that kind of weird teenage sexuality thing. I think Michael Bluth and his relationship with his parents there is another thing that I think when they ever try to lean on it for one serious dramatic beat, they do it really well. Yeah, this show just, it does some little things, the little serious things that it doesn't try to do a lot of. It does them very well. And yeah, I think it's a late metaphor, but it goes back to the ostrich. It's just not doing what's expected of it. And in a failing way, in a way that it has a goal that it has something that it has something that's expected of it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't do it. I don't know if the ostrich wants to fly, but everyone looks at it and it's a bird that has wings and it doesn't fly. And it's just a disappointment. Everyone in the show is pretty much a disappointment. One of the main visual motifs we get in this season is just the empty chairs at Lucille's courtroom, you know, at her trial.
Yeah.
This is just constant disappointment and not what expected of it. And in that weird meta way, it is so telling that this show was on Fox, which is seen as this super conservative thing, entity, with Murdoch and all the weird political stuff they've been involved in, and announcing the win for George W. Bush too early, which a lot of people point to as this real turning point in American history, like modern American history. Yeah. It was this show that was very funny, but you know, it succeeded on its own terms, but failed on the terms that other people set for it. Not a lot of people liked it at the time. Fox didn't think it was getting good ratings. it's all I can really come back to is just, it's oddly tragic for a show that I find so funny. Is that, and it's a show that has a lot of satire in it too. So it's, in a way, it's weird, but in a probably more accurate way, it's extremely appropriate. It really is a show about disappointment and not meeting expectations of those around you. Okay. And that's the ostrich is everywhere, and it's in all the promo stuff. In one way, it's just kind of this goofy, weird animal because, oh, it's got these long legs and this long neck and these wings that don't really work. But in a way, it's like every member of this family who can't do what's expected of them.
Okay.
And you have anything on the ostrich?
No. I'm just, you know, I'm still trying to just sort of sort it out. I think the biggest... and again, I think... well, I guess not again. I haven't mentioned it yet. I've thought it in my head. But I don't totally agree with you as far as the more quiet moments of the show or the less comedic moments of the show. I don't think they hit home, but like they seem to do for you. Until sort of Lucille in this season, I think. Her later stuff, I think, was really good, where she sort of has these moments of actual sadness to herself. I really enjoyed those, but... I think for the most part, the show is too zany for me to get in any way emotionally attached to any sort of moment. You know what I mean? And I've talked about this before on two podcasts we've mentioned earlier, the 30 Rock podcast, how as much as I love that show, I was never particularly attached to any character. Whereas with The Office, even though I think it's a much worse show than both of these shows, Arrested Development and 30 Rock, I'm much more attached to any one of the characters just because of the world that's presented. And that's just sort of the way, I don't know, that's the way I deal with movies and TV or how they work in my head. But I think the because the ostrich is everywhere, so it has to have a meaning. Like, I mean, even something map car, all throughout. And I think the biggest clue we get is in Buster's episode, we see him looking at the back of a juice box. And there's sort of like a question and answer with a cartoon, and it's somebody sitting on an ostrich, somebody that looks like Lucille too, no less. But, and it says on the back, what happens when you stick your head in the sand? Answer, don't be surprised if someone uses you as a footstool. And so I just sort of think that either the season's supposed to be about ignorance or passivity. And I don't think any of the characters are passive enough for it to be about that. And I think, like you said, and like I mentioned all the graduate stuff, it sort of has to just be about being lost and not being able to really do what you're expected to do, or not being sure what to do, because that's what The Graduate is. Every time The Sound of Silence plays, that's what Job is thinking. He's like, what am I supposed to do? And it's sort of the stagnation. And I think it's just sort of meant to say that basically all the Bluths just sort of have their head stuck in the sand. And I think the idea is that I think there probably will be a third act at this point. But it's how they get their head out of the sand, I think, is what comes next. Yeah.
What does come next? If you said there's a third act, this would make this act two, which is supposed to end on a downbeat, and we get the Lucille 2 murder plot. We get a lot of negative stuff. Like,
oh, everybody's in that spot.
Yeah, everyone's pissed at each other. Even kind of a lot of the pairings that we get in this show, we get George Michael and his father. They're not in a good spot. We just saw him punch him in the face. Yeah. Tobias and Lindsay, who are frequently on the rocks, they are, you know, not together. Lucille 2's dead. Or probably dead, but who knows with this show.
I got my fingers crossed.
She's so funny.
Liza Minnelli is amazing.
Newport. Did you catch that?
Yes, I did.
I like that one.
Yeah.
What's next? Do we get a third act? Is it going to be upbeat? Yeah, we kind of took this to a weirdly dark place near the end here.
Season 4 does. That's season 4 is very dark.
Right.
Like you said, there is a haven for sex offenders in this show, you know?
Yeah.
This is not our fault.
Do we get another season?
I think we get something else. I don't know.
Either movie or show?
Yeah, because Netflix has said... I think his name's Reed Hastings, the CEO. You know, kind of... it's well known at this point that he sort of after the release said, if the cast and them are up for doing more, we'll do more. Selfishly, I kind of just want it to be more ensemble thing. I don't care. I would take a 90-minute movie of ensemble over a 7-hour series of season 4 type stuff again. Right. As much as I enjoy and appreciate season 4, I'm selfish enough to admit that I would rather have the ensemble stuff.
Yeah, and
you know I'll what? Take I'll take whatever I can get. If it's just like a season of just Maybe and Tobias, then fine. I'll watch it. I'll probably love it. You know?
Yeah, but I think I agree with you. I think that, you know, I talked perhaps too kindly about how this season fits into a format that they're more or less forced into.
Yeah.
But I think just for purposes of changing it up and really proving that they can do something in a new format. Like, they did TV pretty well, probably a little too well. The show was a little, I think it was still too big to be a show that was on every week and then not even on every week, mm-hmm. you know, with as much connection between episodes. And
yeah,
you know, this is a great DVD. Season 1 to 3 is a great DVD show. It's still a great TV show, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Season 4, I think, is a great Netflix product. Yeah. I'm not saying it's not the greatest, you know, bit of writing and performing, but for Netflix, for this very new format, I think it's a great fit. And I would love to see a really well done, I want to say 300-minute movie.
Yeah.
You know, 90 to 100-minute movie. I would love to see, as you were talking about when we were dealing with the chronology, that escalation of things. You know, if you can build to a huge third act, big blowout, I think would be amazing. And I would love to see them tackle another format. TV was very conventional. Netflix is really cutting edge. Film is not going to be very cutting edge, but I think it's just a new format, different, more of a change from Netflix to normal TV is film to Netflix or normal TV. So I would really like to see them just take that new format, really play to that format's strengths, which yep. would involve complete escalation, explosion, and resolution.
Yeah,
and then maybe that be that.
Yeah, I think, the one everybody seems pretty stuck on the another season or a movie. I think what's most likely is, like we said, I think the writing staff has their hearts set on an ensemble. And then I think they would do as long as they can with an ensemble. If they can only get them together long enough to shoot a movie, then they do a movie. But you know, we've sort of proven that Arrested Development has sort of proven that traditional release models don't really work for it. So I don't know that necessarily a studio movie release would work for them. I think it's very likely that maybe we just get, you know, a three 50-minute episodes of Arrested Development to wrap things up. I think what comes next is pretty definitely ensemble, and then however long everybody can be together is how long the final product is. I think whatever comes next, it comes next on Netflix, be it a movie or TV show or miniseries type thing.
Yeah, I think it's going to, you know, the way that they were going from a strict 21 to 22 minute episode to now they can kind of do 30, 35 minute episodes. I think they're going to continue. I think it would make sense to continue down that path, do something with Netflix still. Make it 50, 55, 60, whatever that individual plot calls for, and keep up with that. I love what Netflix is doing as far as giving creators their chance to make what they want in the exact format they want. I think it only makes sense for Arrested Development to continue doing that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think you're right as far as having more of that escalation, having more of that ensemble stuff, three things like that. Really tighten it up, really make it especially rewarding on the first viewing, and then go out with a bang.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of going out with a bang, thank you for listening to our podcast, and we're done.